It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Day one of free agency was a big day for running backs, as well as the biggest quarterback name on the market. All that and more on today's RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Big day. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Jim Coventry here, and I'm joined by Anthony Servino. We'll be doing this podcast every Monday. Remember to follow Anthony at The Real NFL Guru. You can find me over at Jim Coventry NFL. Now, before we begin with unofficial free agency, the NFL's tampering period rules, these are them, so you're on the same page. Teams began engaging with agents at noon Eastern time on Monday. Deals could be agreed to but not finalized. No deal could become official until after the 4 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday. And unlike times in the past, we said teams could talk to agents. Even players who represent themselves without an agent can talk to these teams Wednesday before Wednesday at 4 Eastern. All right, finally, this show is recorded at 5 p.m. Eastern on Monday, so we may not cover all of the biggest news of the day. We'll cover what's happened. All right, Anthony Servino, we are starting out. Kirk Cousins goes to the Atlanta Falcons. 4 years, $180 million with $100 million guaranteed. Now, Kirk Cousins, he pretty much was good for 43 or so hundred yards, 30-ish touchdowns every season with Minnesota, and he played very well under Kevin O'Connell. Last year, cut short by an Achilles injury, 8 games, he was on pace for his best season. Kirk Cousins, 2,300 yards, 18 touchdowns, 5 picks. Again, that was in 8 games. Now, he goes to Atlanta. Zach Robinson is the offensive coordinator. Now, Robinson, remember, he was working as an offensive coordinator for Sean McVay, and so he learned from him. But if he wants to bring McVay's offense over, that's heavy 11 personnel or 3 wide receivers. Right now, it's Drake London, and you got guys like Kadarius Hodge, Mac Hollins, a bunch of really not guys you want in 3 receiver sets. There's Kyle Pitts and, of course, running back Bijan Robinson. What are your initial thoughts on Kirk Cousins landing on the Falcons?
The Cousins landing spot in Atlanta is what I wanted to see the entire time. I've always believed Atlanta was a quarterback away. Even when Arthur Smith was there and they finally got their guy, they were saying, you know, for the past few weeks, they were going to be hot and heavy on Cousins. They go out and get him. They give him a contract that Minnesota was not going to match. And I think this is a nice fit. Now, I don't think Atlanta's done. They haven't, very underrated. I think a top 5 ceiling offensive line. The defense is up and coming. We know that they heavily addressed their skill position players the past few NFL drafts in the top 10. I can see Atlanta once again going into the draft and getting another wide receiver.
They definitely have to do that because realistically, yes, the offense can be good with what they currently have. But I don't know that it could be great with what they currently have. And I really think if you're bringing in Cousins and you're spending, this is a win now move. I know it's a 4-year deal. It's a 36-year-old quarterback. And by the way, not worried about the Achilles injury. That's an injury that saps explosiveness. Well, that's something that Kirk Cousins doesn't exactly have. So we don't have to worry about that at all. He's a pocket passer. Now, fantasy-wise, as of today with the current configuration of the Falcons team, where would you rank Kirk Cousins roughly in terms of the quarterback landscape? Would he be quarterback 8? Would he be 6? Would he be 12? What are your thoughts?
I mean, from what we know today, I mean, Cousins, in terms of fantasy points per game, he's a perennial quarterback 1 for the most part. I would probably put him in that 11 to 12 range with the current personnel. And something when you were talking, I just looked up. Would it surprise you one bit if they brought over KJ Osborne, who's a free agent, a little bit of a rapport there with Kirk Cousins, and he's not going to break the bank?
So interesting with KJ Osborne. the best thing KJ Osborne does is block. Phenomenal blocking. He was that's why he played 90% plus of the snaps. It was like it wasn't like Jordan Addison couldn't beat him out. It was that literally they needed the blocking receiver because of all the zone defenses that are played. But that said, that is part of McVay uses blocking receivers to a degree as well. So that move could make sense. And we know Cousins will throw the ball the way. Quickly on Drake London. Right now, very, very bullish on him. You go from having Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heinicke to now having a real quarterback. Drake London had 900 yards last year, 905 and two touchdowns, 110 targets. I think Drake London is a star type player. Yeah. And I think you could reasonably start talking about him once 8 to 10 wide receivers are off the board. You can start thinking about him. What are your thoughts on him?
I mean, this guy has a pedigree, former 8th overall pick, 2022 draft, never had that quarterback, and now he does. And he's never exceeded 117 targets in the season, but you know what, Cousins there, I think we're going to finally see this kid shine. I don't know how heavy and high I'm going to rank him yet. I think it's a little bit too early, but you know, wide receiver 42 and 43 first two seasons is in fantasy points per game. He's easily in the top 20 with Kirk Cousins. Easily.
Last year, Drake London at one point was being drafted as the wide receiver 22 and fell flat on that. I have to think that he will be drafted higher this year because of Kirk Cousins being there, despite the finishes. And remember, Arthur Smith ran the ball just way too much. Kyle Pitts is next. So Kyle Pitts, I think the biggest problem that I saw, well, there are two obvious. The obvious problem that everybody knows is Pitts didn't get enough work. He did have 90 targets last year, but for a player of his talent caliber, the 110 he saw as a rookie is more realistic. But it was the fact that he saw 99th percentile air yards. He was used on too many deep passes, not enough nickel and dimes to get him involved, get him running after the catch. So that was a big problem. There were boom or bust passes from bad quarterbacks. So we saw Pitts in 17 games go for 667 yards and three touchdowns. Now, he at one point said his knee may not have been right, and that may be part of it. But again, the overuse on deep passes. I have to believe Pitts right now is the number two receiver in this office, being he's a tight end. But I do think with Kirk Cousins, things drastically change. Thoughts on Kyle Pitts?
Now, we've been waiting for somebody to come over and unlock Kyle Pitts. And you know, the Arthur Smith narrative, that's now gone. Jonnu Smith is now gone. And I think we're finally going to see Kyle Pitts, who is, you know, a mismatch nightmare, really be unleashed with Cousins. And let's not forget how much TJ Hockenson flourished with Kirk Cousins. So we could see a big time increase in production from Kyle Pitts. It's just a matter of how much higher is the industry, because they're perennially in on Kyle Pitts. Where does this put this guy? And is he going to be priced out of where we're willing to pay for him?
And I think that's an accurate statement, because people that have been in on Kyle Pitts throughout the 3 years, the biggest excuse is going to be the right one, that there was no quarterback play, and now he has a quarterback. So anybody who has believed in Kyle Pitts, and that was the rationale for writing it off, it's very easy to not just go in on him, but to double down. There will probably be people willing to take him as the tight end four. That would not surprise me if people are willing to go that route. And that's why I probably don't end up with shares of him, but you bring up a great point. If you're going to pay for him, you better hope you're going to get a 1,200-yard, 9 to 11 touchdown season. And that's in the range of outcomes for sure. But if you don't get that and you're spending up, that would be the problem. But he may well cash there. All right, more fallout from this deal. So Kirk Cousins is no longer in Minnesota. Minnesota has Jaren Hall. They have Nick Mullins. They have a whole lot of problems. But more importantly, they have Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. And now, and I know they played the second half of the season without really great quarterback play, and Jefferson missed some of that time. What are your thoughts today for Jefferson and Addison with no Kirk Cousins in town?
I'm legitimately worried about the overall outlook of the Minnesota Vikings. We don't know what they're going to do at quarterback. I believe Gardner Minshew was even scooped up.
Yes, so like, the Raiders.
If we're looking at, you know, are they going to go get a rookie and try to develop him? Are they going to kick the tires on a veteran like Jacoby Brissett? Do they bring in Jimmy Garoppolo? What's out there right now it makes me really want to shy away from guys like Jefferson and Addison. And I get it. You know, Jefferson's an elite talent, but and he was coming off the injury, but he didn't fare that well without Kirk Cousins and that slew of quarterbacks Minnesota put out there.
It's going to be a bit of a problem. I mean, Justin Jefferson is still a superstar. We don't question that for a second. But if there are other similar type superstars, like, for instance, if you're drafting today, CeeDee Lamb has Dak Prescott. We know he's not going to get that crazy volume he had in the second half. That was off the charts. But if you were drafting with the uncertainty of quarterback for Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb, is CeeDee Lamb ahead of Jefferson?
Absolutely.
Not and that's knowing an important what the
quarterback
point.
Situation is? Absolutely.
And then what do we do with Jordan Addison? Because Justin Jefferson is going to command heavy, heavy target share. And whichever quarterback it is, if it's a bad quarterback, they're going to lean more likely on the player that is transcendent.
You know, I love Jordan Addison. I think he's a, you know, I say it all the time. You put T. Higgins and Jordan Addison, they're both number twos on their team. If you ask me who can go and be the number one elsewhere, that player to me is Jordan Addison. And again, with this uncertainty at quarterback, he's going to dramatically fall in my rankings. And you know where my mindset is. It would not surprise me. And I'm going to bring this up right here. If Minnesota traded Jefferson, I think there's a world where he could be on the move if they can't bring the quarterback and they're kind of going into small rebuilds. You have Hockenson, you have Addison. Why pay Jefferson when you can flip him and you're rebuilding anyway? And it sounds crazy, but we've seen crazier things happen. Like guys like A.J. Brown, remember, I believe he was traded to Philly.
You know, and that is a great precedent. A superstar receiver in the very prime of his career, inexplicably being traded. But that has happened. And draft day, there have been a lot of deals for wide receivers over the years that have been done. And so this is something to bank. Remember, Anthony Servino said it first if it happens. All right, let's move on. Saquon Barkley. He stays in the NFC East, but he's no longer with the Giants. He settles with the Eagles. 3 years, $37.75 million. It could be worth up to $46 million plus. $26 million matches his jersey number, or old jersey number. It's fully guaranteed. So that said, let's take a look at Saquon Barkley. First of all, the player that we've seen the last couple of years, it's very hard to evaluate him, and here's why. There's been no competent quarterback play. There have not been receivers that scare the defenses. Therefore, even with Brian Daboll there, defenses could kind of sell out on Barkley. Now, the good news for Barkley is after missing 22 games in his first 3 years, he's only missed 4 games the last 2 years. He's still 27 and he's young. And what I do like, let's stay on the positive here for a moment, because of all that missed time early in his career, he only has about 1,200 carries and less than 300 receptions in 6 years. So he doesn't have heavy tread on his tires. So that works for him. Now, we look at his numbers. The last 3 years, only 4.07 yards per carry. But we could write a lot of that off. As I said earlier, overstacked boxes. An offensive line, last year especially, that may have been one of the worst lines we've ever seen. And then even as a receiver, we've seen Barkley's numbers slide. Last year, in the last 3 years, 6.3 yards per reception. But again, with defenses having nobody else to worry about, Barkley had a stacked deck against him. And I know running backs see that all the time. I understand that. Last thing I'm going to cite before I turn to you, though. The one thing that was troubling his broken tackle rate last year was 34th percentile. Now, we see good running backs in bad situations still break tackles. That was problematic. Now, after contact, Barkley was great, 70th percentile. But even after the catch, 12th percentile. Again, we go back and forth. Was it the team he was on, or was it him post all those injuries? Frame this for you. He goes from the worst offensive line to a very good offensive line to an offense where A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, Jalen Hurts, defenses have to worry about the passing game. Barkley should have room. What are your thoughts on Saquon Barkley going to the Eagles?
You know, you initially, I think it was the first show we did here on this podcast, and you brought up the Christian McCaffrey narrative and how much percentage of McCaffrey can we get out of Saquon. The more it marinated and I put these landing spots, you know, it was either to me at Houston, Dallas or Philly and the type of offenses and the offensive line. I initially said like 80%. I think it's going to be a lot closer to 90-100% with Saquon Barkley in Philly. Now, the offensive line might take a little bit of a step back without Kelce, right? He's the anchor. He's a leader. But still, massive upgrade over what Saquon had with the New York Giants. Massive upgrade in terms of skill position players in the passing game around him. And, of course, the quarterback position. And likes, you know, CMC, don't forget, he was in a similar situation with Carolina where he didn't really have much to work with. The offensive line was not great, and he still flourished, and he gets unlocked in San Francisco. We could be looking at something very similar here if, and it's a big if Saquon stays healthy. So I'm extremely bullish on this move to where, like, he can automatically be my RB2 behind CMC right now.
There's an important addition I want to make. Remember, when we have highly mobile quarterbacks, RPO concepts, freezes linebackers, that always gives the running back a nanosecond advantage as linebackers will freeze. Barkley has never, he had Daniel Jones, I get it, but the problem was they didn't really have a passing game. So yes, he got the edge from an RPO quarterback, but their pass option wasn't one defense is worried about. So he didn't get the full benefit of that. But I believe with Jalen Hurts, who is an upper tier running quarterback, Barkley does get an enormous benefit here from defenses that won't be able at all to go downhill against him on many occasions. And all right, yes, go ahead.
And I get that Jalen Hurts gets a lot of those, the tush push and the goal line carries. Losing Kelce could, you know, they had a high, obviously a very high conversion percentage on that play. A lot of that rides on Kelce.
And it was frequently said that, yes, it was Kelce who was the catalyst of the tush push because he at center got so low and he was so powerful driving. And of course, Hurts with his incredible leg strength, that was kind of where the tush push was often won. So that's a great point as well. Let's go to the next move. Josh Jacobs goes to the Green Bay Packers. Now, Josh Jacobs is 26 years old. It'll be when he starts the season. He's been in the league 5 years. Now, remember in 2022, he had his career year. That was the year the Raiders did not pick up his fifth year option. And he came in like a man ready for business. And he had 4.9 yards per carry. But if we look at Josh Jacobs, the 3 years that surround that career year, that 4.9 yards per carry for Josh Jacobs becomes 3.84, a full yard and change less. Now, last year, 2023, Josh Jacobs' broken tackle rate, 40th percentile. His yards after contact, even worse, 33rd percentile. Now, Jacobs has been a good receiver in his career. Usually over the last few years, catches about three passes a game. In four or five seasons, at least 7.2 yards per reception. So Josh Jacobs is a very solid running back, but I don't believe other than that career year has he been a spectacular running back. And the Packers offensive line, I graded the run blocking out at a C last year. It was good. It was not great. And Aaron Jones is gone, which was re-upped. That's Aaron Jones was released after this move. So Josh Jacobs will be the guy. What do you think Josh Jacobs will be in terms of fantasy with the Green Bay Packers?
I'm with you where that season he had a couple of years ago was more of an anomaly than the normal. But I do think we're going to get a better version of Josh Jacobs with the Green Bay Packers just because I like their offensive scheme better. Now, the offensive line is going to take a hit. Obviously, we talked earlier, you know, losing Bakhtiari, not as big of a deal since, as you noted, he did miss a lot of games. But they also lost Runyon, which is a nice presence on the interior. But still, this is an upgraded offense from what Josh Jacobs dealt with, especially last season with the Raiders. And he can catch the ball in the backfield. I think he's a little bit underrated there. So I think he's going to be more deployed as a little bit of a younger version of Aaron Jones.
So all that said, if you're drafting today, what range would Josh Jacobs be? Is he just an automatic top 12 running back? Is he more like a top 15, a top 18? Personally, I will put him right around that running back 10 to 12 range because I do think he gets volume, and that is king. But what are your thoughts, Anthony Servino?
I'm closer to the 12 to 15 range just because I want to see what else Green Bay does. Because they might not be done adding running backs. I'm not saying they're not going to make a big splash. But, you know, A.J. Dillon's also a free agent. So I don't think this is just going to be solely Jacobs. And it's not something that Green Bay normally does with just one guy. So, you know, I think maybe Jacobs sees a little bit of a decrease in touches depending on what Green Bay does, whether it's in the draft or the second tier of free agency.
I'm glad you said that. And that's something I didn't take into consideration. If Aaron Jones, in my opinion, is a superstar, if he was never going to get the full load in Green Bay, why would Josh Jacobs? So let me go back and piggyback off of you. And I would say, yes, more running back 12 to 15, because you're right. That is not going to be the high usage that I had thought. It is going to be more like Aaron Jones type usage, because Jones wasn't 28, 29 those years before. He was Josh Jacobs' age now. So that you are probably correct, and it's a great call. All right, we'll talk about more of the free agent landing spots when we return. Tony Pollard is next. Tony Pollard goes to the Tennessee Titans. 3 years, $24 million. Now, the first running back to get signed today was DeAndre Swift, about 3 years, $24 million, the same money Tony Pollard gets from the Titans. Now, what I'll point out about Pollard, we talked about this in the past. When Tony Pollard had Ezekiel Elliott as the lead back, my firm belief was that the offense ran at Elliott's speed. Tony Pollard was the change of pace. The defense is playing at the speed of the primary guy. As a result, we've seen it on many teams in many scenarios. The change of pace guy eats huge numbers. And Tony Pollard did not disappoint. From 2021 to 2022, 5.2 to 5.5 yards per carry, even yards per reception from 8.6 to 9.5. But then we saw Elliott go. And Pollard did break his leg at the end of the 2022 season. Don't know if that was a factor. But that said, no Elliott, down to 4 yards per carry. So Tony Pollard fell off almost a full yard and a half. Yards per reception went down to 5.7. So Tony Pollard was down over 3 yards per reception. All that said, he goes to Tennessee. The offensive line fall off from Dallas, who had a good line, to Tennessee that has a well below average line. Now they may work to shore that up, but still it's going to be a downgrade in line. Instead of having the passing game of Prescott, Lamb, Ferguson to take pressure off the running game, he now is going to probably have Will Levis, an aging DeAndre Hopkins, and Chigi Okonkwo. So all that said, and we'll talk about Tyjae Spears in a minute. What are your thoughts on Tony Pollard on the Titans?
You know, the Titans were the last team that I thought were going to add a running back. And I think because I had my Tyjae Spears blinders on, but I low-key like this move because this is a nice fit for Pollard where he's not going to be the guy. It's going to be a shared backfield. So I'm in on Pollard in terms of how I feel about him in fantasy. Last year, a lot of us, including myself, were drafting him in the first round. He's not going to touch the first round. I don't even know if he's going to go in the top five rounds because I know the industry is very bullish on Spears. So Pollard might actually fall to a point to where he's a value pickup.
So here's the thing. I'm almost concerned that Tony Pollard and Tyjae Spears are a little bit similar in play style. They both are your fast change of pace guy. Tyjae Spears benefited from Derrick Henry, I felt, the same way that Tony Pollard benefited and from Zeke Elliott. So if that's the case, obviously they're paying Pollard. When you're paying him $8 million a year, he's the guy. He gets the first crack at being the guy. But what do you do on passing downs? Do you take out Tony Pollard for Tyjae Spears? And the other thing is the speed of the game is going to be not the same, but similar. It's not going to be a power back and a fast back. It's going to be two faster backs. Now, in terms of numbers last year, and again, this might be because Derrick Henry was setting the tone, but Spears broke a tackle rate, 80th percentile, yards after contact, 71st. That blew away Tony Pollard, But again, we're back to the argument, lead guy versus having a tone setter ahead of you. So that said, Pollard, like you said, we're going to see where he falls to in drafts. He's going to get the opportunity. He should get 60% of the work, I would imagine. I'd be surprised if he got much more or even much less. It should be right around there. So I would right now say, based on last year also, I've got to put him as a running back too. Probably running back 15, 18. What are your thoughts there?
For Pollard?
Yep.
I'll probably have him in that 20 range. I need to see, you know, because this just happened. I need to see how Tennessee plans to use him or if there's any reports from beat writers I can dig into.
What do we do with Tyjae Spears if we're drafting early now? Because, again, I'm worried that Tony Pollard is somewhat redundant to Spears at the same type of role. So Tyjae Spears right now – earlier drafts, people were excited. People were taking him early thinking there's a chance he's the guy. Well, that's not going to happen now at $8 million a year for Tony Pollard. So Tyjae Spears, he had 938 yards on 100 carries and 52 catches. That was a very productive season. Is he going to get that volume? I think the yards go down. I think with him not having a Derrick Henry ahead of him, I think he's now more of one of those hand, you know, those second tier running backs that when they don't have optimal situation, they fall off. I'm nervous about Spears. Thoughts?
Yeah. I, again, when it comes to Spears and Pollard, I'm not exactly bullish on either one of them, especially because we don't know how the rest of this offense is going to look. It's still very earlier in the offseason. There's a new regime in town. Are they going to try to add receivers? You know, what is the quarterback going to look like entering year two? So I have so many question marks with this offense to where, this is not a situation where I could be confident in either running back.
Unless Tyjae Spears falls outside of 10 rounds. Right now, there's not even close to that. Right now, he's an early pick. But yeah. With Pollard there, I just am worried, again, about the similar play style, the no lead back like Derrick Henry. So I think that Tyjae Spears be overdrafted. I would only take him at a steep discount, and I don't think that steep discount is coming because what people saw last year, they're going to remember this was a very, very effective running back, again, Tyjae Spears. So, all right, let's move on. The next move, which was the first move of the day, DeAndre Swift goes to the Chicago Bears, 3 years, $24 million. Now, we remember last year, in week one, the Philadelphia Eagles barely used DeAndre Swift. So I think a lot of people sat him in week two. I want to say that's when he had the 175-yard game. He had another 100-yard game the week after. After that, he had a 90-yard game late in the season against New York. 4.6 yards per carry. In theory, that sounds impressive. But when we're talking about a running back with a 48th percentile broken tackle rate, 49th percentile yards after contact, and he was behind that Philly line, it was disappointing. And the problem with Swift is this. It's vision. He can run to the hole that is given, but it's when he sees the second level. He doesn't see when it opens and when to make moves. So he doesn't get that extra yardage that a better running back would get when there's, again, chaos at the second level. He doesn't really do that well. Now, in Detroit, DeAndre Swift was a great receiver. He was hardly used as a receiver in Philadelphia. Now, that could be because Detroit used him on actual routes. They ran him. It wasn't just these dump-offs. They would run him on routes. So in Philadelphia, 29th percentile yards after the catch. Again, it was not a lot of schemed-up stuff, so maybe not his fault. So all that said, he goes to the Bears. Now, right now, I rated the Bears as having an adequate to average run blocking line. They're not bad. They're a decent run blocking unit. Not the Eagles. Not close to the Eagles. And not knowing the quarterback situation, he certainly, DeAndre Swift, won't get the benefits of having A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, and Jalen Hurts. He's not going to get those benefits. So before we talk about the ancillary Bears back, let's just focus on DeAndre Swift. What's his role with the Bears? What are your expectations?
You know, looking into DeAndre Swift, he finally got into a situation last year where he would be the guy. And when it comes to his fantasy point per game output, it was the worst of his career. You know, you're talking about guys like Tony Pollard and Tyjae Spears. I feel like DeAndre Swift fits that mold to where he's more productive when he's the change of pace back or the pass catching back. And I can realistically see that role for him in Chicago if we assume that Roschon Johnson might be the guy on early downs?
So that's where it gets interesting. Roschon Johnson, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, his broken tackle rate's near the bottom of the league. Yards after contact as a runner, bottom of the league. I thought his only utility was he could pass block. He honestly, Anthony, he cannot run at an NFL level. He is not an NFL running back. He could be receiving down back. He can block. And he has some decent hands out of the backfield that they use him in that capacity. Based on what we saw last year, that affirmed what I thought going in. And again, in college, he got away with it because he was bigger than everybody. And you could take it to the outside in college because you can use your size. But I was concerned about that. And maybe I'm wrong. And I have no monopoly on the truth. But my thought is, if you're paying a guy $8 million a year, he's not your third down back. He's your early down back. You're paying him significant money. So Roschon Johnson, I thought that was maybe my question. So Roschon Johnson is going to be a much better pass protector on passing downs than DeAndre Swift is. But DeAndre Swift, if he is used properly, and I don't know that Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator, is going to use Swift great as a receiver because he had Kenneth Walker. He had Zach Charbonnet. And I didn't see a lot of creative routes being run by the running backs. So it may not be a scenario where Swift could be used as he is in Detroit. So I guess my question, I want you to circle back to Roschon Johnson. If you still think he's going to be have a shot at the early now back, that's absolutely great. Tell us a little more about that. How would you value Johnson right now with the addition of Swift? We'll talk about Khalil Herbert in a minute.
You know, these two players, whether it's Roschon or Swift, they could potentially eat into each other. This is another Tennessee type of backfield where I view them very similar. And when I look at Swift and really dig into him, as I just said, like I don't love him as a lead back.
So all that said, my personal thought is Roschon Johnson is going to have some opportunities to pass block a third down, but if they're in trail mode, it may be needing Swift's burst as a receiver on the field. So that's going to be tricky. So I was out on Roschon Johnson last year. I know a lot of people love him. I think DeAndre Swift is going to be a problem on passing. That's him. Khalil Herbert, to me, right now, he is literally going to be the third running back. See, five snaps a game. Could even be inactive, depending if they need special teams help. Thoughts on Khalil Herbert?
Is Herbert a guy who could be possibly the odd man out and possibly traded?
Really hard to trade running backs, especially one with Herbert doesn't quite have the track record, but it is possible. It certainly is possible, but it's very hard to get into a meaningful trade market for a running back, but it's not out of the question. I mean, maybe a team is enamored with some things they saw from Herbert. I just don't think the body of work is going to be one where teams are going to be, you know, looking for him. So I do think that he's a player right now, unless you're banking on a backup in a deep draft for injury purposes, that would be about it. But I do. Yeah. Otherwise, do you think he has to be the odd man out, correct?
I would say so. I would certainly think he's the odd man out.
All right, let's go to our next signing. Devin Singletary to the New York Giants. 3 years, $16.5 million. Now, that could be worth up to $19.5 million with whatever incentives were involved in the contract. So it's $5.5 million a year on average, which means they're paying him real money to be a running back. They're not paying him $8 million like DeAndre Swift's making, but $5.5 million is a little bit of a commitment. Now, a few things about Devin Singletary. First of all, he is back with Brian Daboll, who actually ran him out of town in Buffalo, which was interesting that he wants him back. But Singletary is the definition of an ordinary running back. He's a compiler. And for fantasy football, that's great. Volume is king in fantasy football. And last year, when Singletary had a career-high 216 carries, yes, he got you the most rushing yards of his career, obviously, when you have the most carries, and he got you good fantasy points. And so he was able to do that. But look, in terms of rushing, his 4.2 yards per carry, worst of his career. And in Buffalo, saw a lot of light boxes, over 4.6 yards per carry. So he had that, but he still couldn't get the five. And he even had C.J. Stroud last year. Again, 4.2. And his peripherals, very, like I said, ordinary. 56th percentile broken tackle rate. After contact, 44th percentile. So Devin Singletary, basically, we saw this in the Baltimore playoff game, but this is a microcosm of who he is. So Devin Singletary will get you that one longer run, but then he'll be like a gain of one, a zero, a two, and then maybe it mix in another seven or an eight. That doesn't move an NFL offense, and that becomes problematic. As a receiver, yeah, 62nd percentile after the catch, decent receiver. So, Anthony, he goes from Houston, who had a decent offensive line, to the Giants, who right now had the worst line I've seen. The passing game I don't think is going to be respected by defenses. So Singletary is going to see a lot of bodies most likely. What are your thoughts on potential volume? And Singletary is a fantasy asset with the New York Giants. Eric Gray is in the picture potentially, but he only had 17 carries last year.
You know, Devin Singletary might get volume, but how efficient is he going to be with that volume? He's never been spectacular anywhere he's been. This is a guy who was on a pretty good offense last year and a really good offense in Buffalo, and he never had that wow factor. And now you take a complete downgrade, a complete step backwards to what could be a bottom five offense or at worst, the worst offense in the NFL. So when it comes to Devin Singletary and fantasy, it would take a lot. Like I don't know if I'm taking him outside the top eight rounds. I think that's being generous.
Agreed. And like, you know, you're intimating, he'll have some value because he will get some volume and that will pile up to some points. But realistically, the team he's on, it's going to be a tough sell. And don't rule out the fact, look, Eric Gray came into the league. He tested his pre-draft testing, 30th percentile speed, so not great, 53rd percentile agility, average, explosiveness, 69th percentile. So we're not looking at a dominant athlete, but a good training camp from Eric Gray, and I could easily see him cutting into Singletary's work. So, but Singletary's kind of in that bucket last year. Rashad White, Alexander Mattison. Rashad White never got pushed, so he had volume all year, and he was like running back six. Alexander Mattison did get pushed. At some point, we saw Ty Chandler do decently, and for a couple of weeks, Cam Akers was getting work. That tells you what they thought about Mattison. So Singletary is going to be maybe one of those two extremes. Maybe he holds off Gray, and maybe the volume is so good that he gets you a floor of points every week. But like you're saying, eighth round or later is probably about right. Any final words on Singletary?
I don't know what it's more about the Giants. I don't know what this team is doing. 2 years ago, they were beating the Minnesota Vikings in the playoffs, and now here we are. Here we are. You lose Saquon, who was kind of the only glue you had to hold it all together, and your answer is Devin Singletary.
On the first day of free agency, I mean, it's very possible they could have waited and they could have gotten him at a bargain basement price. My guess is teams are not beating down the door for Devin Singletary. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I have my finger is not on the pulse of the market, but I really think they could have gotten him for $2.5 million a year. But again, I'm not running an NFL team. I am doing the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. So there's that. All right.
We might be in better shape than running the Giants right now.
Yeah, it's not a high bar to cross, is it? Oh, call the Mara family. We're in. All right. Two more we want to talk about. Gardner Minshew. I laughed in the middle of that. I'm sorry. 2 years, $25 million to the Las Vegas Raiders. Obviously, Jimmy Garoppolo didn't work out. Aiden O'Connell played a bit last year, but it's clear. Overmatched. He looks like a career backup to me. Not a bad quarterback, but not somebody who went leading the team. Now, Gardner Minshew, though, look, last year, he didn't attempt a lot of passes. He had Shane Steichen, a genius, designing offense for him. And so Minshew was able to do enough to help the Colts win games, but his overall numbers were not impressive quarterback numbers. So all that said, he goes to the Raiders. Right now, as of today, Zamir White is their lead running back. Of course, they have Devontae Adams, and they have Jacoby Myers at receiver. Don't know how long Hunter Renfrow is for the team with his contract. All that said, what probability is there a chance that Minshew is the week one starter for the Raiders?
I think he has a better shot than Aiden O'Connell, but the Raiders are one of those teams where I certainly see them going after a quarterback in the NFL draft. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo, he's probably going to be released at some point. But it's Gardner, right? Like, Gardner's a nice quarterback to have. Like, look what he did for the Colts last year, backing up Richardson. And then when Richardson went down, Gardner Minshew was good enough to get that team to the postseason. And I think he's going to serve a similar role for whoever the Raiders draft. I don't think Gardner Minshew is the answer to the quarterback question. I think he's more of either a week one starter to bridge into whatever rookie they bring in, or as a pure backup.
And again, 2 years, $25 million. That is high-end mid-range backup level, maybe bridge quarterback, like you said. I mean, look, Mike Glennon had years ago with the Bears, got $17 million and as a bridge quarterback for them. And Minshew is making far less than that. So you are correct. This is not an investment in Minshew. This is not one the Raiders saying this is our guy. But like you said, if they need him to start games, then they certainly could put him in, but they have to be looking. And, you know, and I know there are very few quarterbacks on the market right now. Realistically, what do the Raiders have to lose kicking the tires on Justin Fields? And I know a lot of people don't like Justin Fields. There's a lot of pros and cons out there, but they need something right now, and at least a mobile quarterback, and maybe getting him in a system where he could kind of work with him. It could possibly work. Any thoughts on Fields potentially maybe ending up there?
You know, the whole field situation with all the movement going on, we haven't heard a ton about Justin Fields. You know, you can connect the dots to the Raiders. You can connect them to even Minnesota. But, I wouldn't hate it if he ended up with the Raiders. I just think the Raiders might go in a different direction and go into the NFL draft. As far as a field suitor, I'm not sure.
All right, let's move on to Gabe Davis, who gets a three-year, $39 million deal with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, this teaches us about the running back and the wide receiver market, because running backs are considered far less valuable. Saquon Barkley got roughly the same contract that Gabe Davis got. That is a complete economic statement about how the positions are valued. I mean, to think Gabe Davis is worth what Saquon Barkley is, but it's position, right? Well, Gabe Davis will be 25 this season. Now, 51st percentile after the catch, but we can kind of write that off. He's more of a deep threat, red zone threat, so there aren't always a lot of yards after the catch on those. It's not like you're a slant and go guy. So that was absolutely acceptable. Now, last year, again, the ultra weird season, Gabe Davis, 300-yard games, but six games with 6 yards or fewer. So the ultimate boom bust player. Now in 2022, that was his best season. He played 15 games, puts up 836 yards on 93 targets, 7 touchdowns. Very good downfield receiver. Every year it's 10 to 15, 20-yard catches. Always gets a couple 40-yard catches in there. But realistically, he goes to the Jaguars. Now, Davis being paid what he's get, that kind of tells me they're pushing Zay Jones out because they want to stretch the field guy. And if they could keep Ridley, they want to be able to expand him and not make him reliant on downfield stuff. Don't know if they retain him. What are your thoughts on Gabe Davis and for fantasy as he goes to the Jacksonville Jaguars?
I think Gabe Davis kind of is what he is in fantasy, supporting wide receiver 2-3, big play threat, you know, great for best ball. What this tells me a little bit more, you know, is how they feel about Christian Kirk emerging as the number one wide receiver that much more. I don't see them bringing Calvin Ridley back.
And that may be the case, but in a fully functional offense, and again, there's nothing functional about the way Jacksonville runs things, putting Press Taylor as the offensive coordinator, but you'd like your X receiver in Calvin Ridley. You'd like your slot receiver in Christian Kirk. You would like a stretch Z when you have a good X Calvin Ridley. And again, I don't know if they'll keep him, and you have a good slot. That third element is the stretch Z receiver, because what that opens up potentially everything. Now, again, assuming that offense is functional based on play calling is another story. But Davis would at least give them that. But like you said, it's possible they might see the writing on the wall that Ridley's not coming back. But that's not a one-for-one replacement. That's a Z receiver for an X receiver, and that's a world of difference. And if you go into Christian Kirk as your number one, I'm sorry, you're not hanging with the Chiefs. And ultimately, that has to be the goal, right? And so not sure what this move means. But look, if with Josh Allen, Gabe Davis was that level of fantasy performer where he was like unreliable outside the top 10 round. Once he's outside of 10 rounds, I might take a look at him. Otherwise, no dice. Thoughts?
Yeah, I'm with you on there. And I don't even know how much I love him in anywhere but best ball because of how erratic he is.
Yes, right. Because you putting him in a managed lineup, knowing there are six potential zeros out there, like, now, a couple of those are like 0.1 or 1.3 or whatever, fine. But those are a lot of zeros. You can't take those in managed lineups, not with somebody that you're putting in as a wide receiver two or a wide receiver three. At this point, you know, you'd hope in a two flex league, but too much. Last player, Gus Edwards goes to the Chargers, 2-year deal. Now, it always stuns me when I look at Gus Edwards' age. He's 29 this season, and he's only been in the league 5 years, so late start, right? First 4 years of his career, Gus Edwards is always a 5 yard per carry guy. Now, last year was the first time he saw more than 144 carries, and he went from that 5 yard per carry runner to 4.1. Why? Here's why. 32nd percentile broken tackle rate, 50th percentile yards after contact. So again, ordinary in terms of that. Now for fantasy, he was great because again, he had the 198 carries. So even at 1 yard per carry less, earlier in his career, he didn't have more than 144 carries. So you're talking another 50 to 60 carries. And then in his first 4 years, he had 13 touchdowns. He had 13 alone last year. So for fantasy, he was great. Functional NFL, they were putting Justice Hill in, which I have my issues, you know that. But I still, the fact they gave Gus Edwards not even more work with Justice Hill, that might speak to the broken tackle rate. How do you see Gus Edwards fitting into the Chargers?
Reliable short yardage back, goal line back. You know, they're going to give him opportunities on a goal line, almost similar to how I viewed him in Baltimore. I see them bringing in another running back. But when it comes to the Chargers overall, look what Peyton is doing in Denver, where he's kind of turning over that entire roster to make it his own. I almost see Harbaugh doing the same thing. And maybe Gus Edwards fits that Harbaugh mold because look where he came from.
There's no doubt. Now we go from the Baltimore run scheme, which had Lamar Jackson. I talk about the lethal mobile quarterback, and they had a good run blocking line. The Chargers offensive line has its issues. They have some star talent on there, Rashawn Slater especially, but the line isn't nearly as good, and he won't get the RPO boost with Justin Herbert that he had with Lamar Jackson. He's 29. So I think ultimately Gus Edwards, unless they add more bodies to the backfield, because Isaiah Spiller, Joshua Kelly, Elijah Dotson, not getting it done. So I do think Edwards could see volume unless they add people and there's value for that. But I do think we could see really close to 4 yards per carry, which is not going to be earth shattering. I know he had the broken play for an 80-yard catch last year, but he's not a receiving back. No. 30 catches in 5 years. That's all he has. So he's not a receiving back. And the 13 touchdowns, good luck repeating that. So I do think based on his fantasy performance, people might say, oh, I think I'm going to say no. I think I'm going to back off. And I love Gus Edwards. I loved him like the 17th round in this 2023 drafts. 2024, I don't think there's a value because of where he's going. Now, also, don't be surprised if Austin Eckler can't get a contract. And if he ends up signing a less than expected deal to be a receiving back with the Chargers, obviously have no intel on that, but that could happen. But there will be a receiving back. So Gus Edwards, where would you draft him if you were drafting today?
You know, I almost view Gus Edwards almost like a Devin Singletary, only I don't think he's going to get as much volume, and he's obviously not the receiver he is. But where Gus is going to make up for the volume Singletary gets is those goal line opportunities, because I do think he's one of the better short yarders backs and he's going to convert more than Singletary can. So really right around that same round, it's just a matter of, do you value those, that the volume and the pass catching opportunities you're going to get with Singletary versus the short yardage goal line opportunities you're going to get with Gus.
Anthony, so day one of free agency, as of this recording, it's still going, but it's slowed down significantly. As of this point, what are your thoughts on day one of free agency?
My mind is blown on how active it's been. It started yesterday, with Judy and Russ and all the comings and goings from today. I'm just waiting on, who's the next domino to fall at the quarterback position. You know, is it going to be a low-end guy? Is it going to be Fields at running back? We still have guys out there like Jones and Henry. My Cowboys don't have a back right now. So there's still so much more to happen.
Yeah, and my takeaway is, running backs in a league where they talk about running backs being devalued today, with running backs out there, it was interesting that we saw, as of this recording, six running backs got signed on day one. Now, Aaron Jones is in the pool, who wasn't in yesterday. Derrick Henry, Austin Eckler, and really it falls off after that. But six running backs on day one. So, and they were all reasonable contracts. Yeah. The fact that Josh Jacobs, $12 million a year. Saquon Barkley, a little more than $12 million a year. And $8 million to Pollard and Swift. So that does tell me that might be a little different thinking than we saw. Well, everybody, we appreciate you being with us for the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Thanks for being here. Our team will have shows throughout the week. Anthony and I will be back next Monday. Be sure to catch us during the week for the RotoWire Fantasy Football Live Show on RotoWire Twitter and Facebook.